you know, we got a lot. This is a very listener heavy episode.
Right.
One last thing. I know we're already recording. I know it's time's of the essence. I'm chewing my gum. Sam, Jamie has been sweet enough to join my workshops from time to time. And last night was really fun, kind of incorporating slowly and slightly some of the clown emotional work with the improv. At the very least, identifying how you feel. It's been really, really nice. I think I mentioned on here, maybe with the Zach episode, that I was going to try this in a workshop. And I feel like it's been beneficial. Last night was really cool.
Love that.
Okay. Don't use any of this audio, Jamie. I'd be mortified if you used this audio. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Comedy Fix podcast. This is Chris, and I'm here, as always, with my two buddies, Jamie and my baby Sam, who's an adult. Sam, you're not a baby. You're an adult.
Yeah, I got a baby face.
Yeah, and I just have, you know, I just love you. Well, with Jamie, you know, he's more of like an adversary. Is that the right word?
This is the right word.
Okay, we're going to jump into today's discussion. It comes from a listener, but before we get started with that particular topic, another listener sent an audio file to the Comedy Fix, and they want to clarify something. So obviously something's going to be lost here when I press play on this audio on my phone into this microphone, into this thing, but I think we'll get the gist. So here we go.
Hey, Comedy Fix podcast. This is Brandon Barrick, longtime fan and featured guest on episode 26. I just wanted to call in and address something that was stated on your podcast on episode 75. Zach Huddleston claimed that I was a member of the Botch Bros. I would just like to state now for the record that I am not now, nor have I ever been, a member of the Botch Bros team. Peter Fulway can back me up on this. I think it's something he said that was incorrect. I don't know why he said it. And I think Zach Huddleston should have to issue a retraction. And I think you guys should do, a better job fact-checking on your podcast. But I love what you do. I'm going to keep listening. Thanks so much, Chris, Jamie. Also, Sam, you're here.
So there it is. Scandalous.
Yeah, we don't even have a fact-checking department. We barely even have an editor.
By the way, I'm mortified that I also got a text during that. Like, come on, I didn't turn my
audio. How fucking popular you are, Chris. People can't get enough. Don't people know you're recording? They should just assume.
So,
just assume. Chris Alvarado's in LA. He must be recording.
He's recording.
Yeah, so, he's live.
You heard it here, everybody. Brandon Barrick says he is not affiliated with the wrestling luchador duo improv Botch Bros. So I don't know. Maybe I'm curious to hear what Zach Huddleston has to say about that. I know they have a close relationship. Maybe he just got confused. Maybe he thought of Brandon while watching. I don't know. I don't want to get into the mess of it, but...
Well, what I'd like to know is... And, Brandon can send a follow-up audio message. But why was he so upset and concerned about getting the record straight? Because we've said a lot of things incorrectly on this podcast.
Mm.
The first one that's triggered an audio response. I would just be curious, what gives?
Yeah, what gives, Brandon? What gives?
Maybe okay. That's too much.
Okay. You can see the Botch Bros not featuring Brandon every other Monday at the Westside Comedy Theater. You can go to westsidecomedy.com. Also, while you're there, you can see when The Park is playing. You can see when Heyday is playing. A lot is going off at the Westside Comedy Theater. Please come see a show. It's every Monday, one of us here will be playing. You know what I'm trying to say.
Very fun.
Okay, fun. So let's get to this listener question here. It's a good one. Again, I'm going to do my best to leave names out and some kind of specifics, because I don't want to ruin anybody's time, because they mention how they play with their current teammates, and I don't want to blow anybody up, because every improviser listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
So I don't want them to put that together. Let's see here. Hi, Jamie, Chris, and Sam. No particular order. I have a question regarding performer insecurity / group cohesion mindset. For context, I went through the Second City Hollywood Conservatory. I work at UCB as a person who takes tickets. I've worked at several other venues on the East Side. I've seen and loved the improv world. My background is in acting. I'm a student going through Stella Adler. Improv as an art form feels like the part of acting where I really flex my abilities to discover something new. Maybe even because I can get present, I have creative ownership that I don't always feel from script work. Basically, here comes their question. In my three-prov team, there is comedic chemistry between the other two, which is clear. And usually when I come in, the scene feels like third wheeling. The energy becomes way more chaotic and always tends to go 2 versus 1 or vice versa. And it's kind of boring? Additionally, I'm generally inspired by physicality, emotion, more intangible, while the others, though I can't super speak for them, seem to be inspired by what is being said and relationship. I guess my question is, does three-prov work? When? What are the elements? In my heart, I think everyone can work with everyone to a capacity, but what are the pros and cons of the different sizes of teams? I've learned a ton from this show and appreciate the healthy discussion of these topics. Thank you all for what you do and being who you authentically are. Well, that's sweet. Three prov, and just, you know, different team sizes in general. Interesting topic here.
Yeah, trios are tricky, I think. We have a show here in Philadelphia that a friend of mine has been producing at Comedy Sports called 3-2-1. In every show, they have a trio and then a duo and then a solo performer. And one thing he's mentioned is that trios are generally harder to find. I think it's easiest to find the duos. But I don't know if a lot of people think about a trio. I can think about a couple that I've seen, but it's definitely a little challenging. And I think part of this for me is trying to separate a three-person scene from a three-person show, because we'll talk a lot about three-person scenes in classes, and that could be your whole show if you did like a mono scene, but there maybe are some other things you can consider with like a three-person show. It doesn't have to be all three-person scenes.
That's a really good point, Sam. Because some of the things we learn about the three-person scene is like what our listener mentioned, right? The try to avoid the 2 versus 1, which happens a lot. Even when you try to avoid it, it just kind of like lands there, Jamie, right? Not even like purposely trying to argue. It just, I don't know how that works in the brain mathematically. It ends up being that way. Otherwise, I guess, what is it? Three separate, points of view on a particular topic?
Well, even... I attended a Chris Alvarado workshop last night, and we were doing a lot of two-person scenes, and then there were only three people left. So we did 1 3-person scene. Everybody started off on the same page, and then within about 15 seconds, it did become 2 against 1. I noticed that, and because the whole exercise was about kind of peas in a pod energy and kind of being the same. So for that to even be the exercise, and then you put three people in a peas in a pod scene, it still became 2 against 1. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I don't like trios. I don't like improv trios. I just don't think they work that well. They're not fun
to
hear
it here.
And I don't hear everybody watch them either. But I will say I'm localizing that just to improv, because I do think trio clown groups work. I do think other kinds of performative trios can work as well. But for improv, it always feels like the third person is a bit of a third wheel, or you just get the 2 against 1 in every scene.
So I think it's nice though for our listener to, at the very least right now, understand that what they're going through is pretty common, that it probably isn't something they are doing or are not doing, right? That like even the best of us find ourselves in these situations, only because I got a sense that maybe they felt maybe a little insecure about what they're bringing to the team. So just like even the best of us can get into that situation where it feels like 2 against 1 pretty easily. Sam, please.
I think it's important that we maybe we talk about what that two against one means, right? Because that's like a scene dynamic and that can shift. And if you're doing like a three-person mono scene, I want a two against one, but I want three different twos against ones, right? And so I was doing a little bit of my improv math before coming here. If you're in a two-person scene, right, I'm playing my game, you're playing your game, I sort of have to like straight man your game, I have to straight man. I'm doing that like 50% of the time, right? I'm either like playing my game or I'm kind of reacting to your game a little bit, right? If I'm in a three-person scene though, all of a sudden there are two different people that I kind of have to straight man a little bit, and I only play my weird thing like a third of the time. So most of the time I might actually be part of that two-on-one, but it might shift which two I'm a part of. This might sound really complicated, but if I'm seeing three people on stage for 15 minutes, I can't have a two-on-one against one person for 15 minutes, but a couple different, you know, 3-minute chunks with different alignments and allies and weirds, like that's where I think you have to shift.
And I guess the two-on-one can mean two people kind of disagreeing with one, where it's like Jamie and I in the scene with you, Sam, we think you need to stop drinking. So it is two versus one, and you do, by the way. But then I guess in the example you just gave, there's something interesting about it not being a conflict, but you maybe being the voice of reason to us two. What a great way to put that. For us two.
Jesus. Yeah.
But if Jamie and I are trying to push a wall down with our bare hands and you're the voice of reason, even though it's not like we're not yelling at each other or it's a conflict, there still is that two against one dynamic there.
Yeah.
About the, please, I keep interrupting you.
No, I was gonna say, like we've done a couple of three-person scenes ourselves, right? And it sort of becomes that share between, okay, you and Jamie have your thing together. Okay, you and I have our thing together. Now I have to find that thing between me and Jamie. And it just sort of, it's challenging because I think you do have to share focus a lot more than you have to in like a two-person scene.
With no additional payoff. That's the thing, is that's my problem, is it's a lot more work. And like the show is not enhanced by three people. I'd rather see two people do it hard and fast, or have an ensemble where you can really build out, you know, the show or the group scenes, and you actually do get something. But with a three person, it's a lot of extra work, and it kind of adds nothing. Well, very, very little.
When you change the mindset, Sam, I'm glad you brought that up, between a three-person scene and a three-person show, it does open things up for me a little bit, where it still could kind of be a series of two-person scenes, but that third person is playing a tree or a rock or a vending machine. Like, we don't see a lot of that in three. It's always what we're talking about, like the two versus one. That would be kind of cool, that the other person is just an extra in the background.
Yeah, and it depends on what form you're doing. I was on a three-person movie team for a short period of time. And you have two people in the scene, and then you have someone else off on the side that can call shots. So for that form, it works a little bit better, I think, than just having two people. So I think that's something to consider on all this, is what kind of show are you trying to put on, right?
Also, I think one of the things that's worth mentioning that our listener said was kind of playing styles and preferences. Now, this can happen in any size team, right? Some people like the physical, some like the emotional, or whatever, everything in between. I wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit, because I think I've spent some time in my life and in my career where I want to do it a certain way, but that's not really like what the team wants to do or something. Or yeah, it's interesting to have your own personal things that make you, you know, pop, the things you want to do, and what if it doesn't gel? Now, if it's me on a team with six other people, maybe it's not as loud when I try to do an emotional scene, because there's more scenes coming up, a lot of different players. But if it's just me and two other people and they want to do, say, game heavy scene work, and I want to do emotional, it might be a little louder. You know what I mean? It might seem like that guy doesn't fit, or I don't know. What are our thoughts on, because we all want to play the way we want to play, right? Like Jamie, I've watched you do that forever. Like, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, right? Like Jamie wants to play the way he wants to play in this moment. Not that you're not a good teammate. When does that become detrimental, or how do we mess with that?
It does it's detrimental when the group is rigid, you know, when they or are inflexible to new ideas. I mean, and I guess I'm not saying anything revolutionary here, but the times when I just do what I want to do and somebody else is on board to also just do what they want to do or kind of go wherever, then that's when fun, exciting stuff can happen. But when I'm doing what I want to do and there are two people who have a very different idea, then it becomes now two actors against one actor, not just two characters versus one character, you know? So that's why I like duo work. I just find them more efficient and we can kind of go deeper faster. Because I mean, I even think about Chris, like for the Park auditions, as you may recall, in the early days of the Park, you were the third member. Mm-hmm. It was Liam.
I don't know. I don't know about that. You have a poster where someone's blacked out. I don't know if that person is me. I'm not here.
Have archival footage of the original poster. no, but it was, we were just doing an audition just for fun. We didn't really care about it. It was low stakes for us. But it was you, Liam, and myself. And we had that 3-person show. I will say that was hard. Liam and I had been used to practicing as a duo, and then just having a third person, even though you're, you know, great, it was harder to do. It was harder to manage, and we didn't get it. But then when Liam and I do the duo, we can kind of, I don't know, we're able to move efficiently and kind mm-hmm. of get to it and kind of go places. Just having that third person on stage, no matter who that person is, it's not a question of talent. It is just a question of this, the personal dynamics on stage. And it was so much harder.
You know, it's interesting with that particular audition. What's interesting is if you had asked me going into the audition, will I be a benefit to this team? I'd be like, for sure. Will the team do better because I'm there? For sure. And then during the audition, Sam, I felt a lot of things coming up, which was I wanted to serve Jamie and Liam the best way I could in their kind of style. But then I felt this, I don't know if it's ego or something coming up that's saying, well, hold on, Chris, like you're like, you got to fill in these blanks here. Or like, I know the people who are judging this particular audition. And if I do some more Chris Alvarado-isms, that might be beneficial. Now, I didn't really act on any of those. And I felt like I was kind of moving through the mud in that particular thing, because I had so many thoughts. And it goes to kind of what you're saying, Jamie. It's like, you're right. It's more efficient with the two. And I guess I was just surprised to have all those personal feelings occurring rather than character feelings, rather than kind of like, I don't know, like falling into different characters with you two. I was having a lot of Chris feelings in there. I want to make sure Jamie feels okay. Or Lee. It was muddy for me. Yeah. We haven't actually spoken about that. I don't think.
It might also be partially just the style of how we play is very, you don't get a lot of reps playing like that. So a lot of it is constant discovery, stepping into the mud.
Listen, for the record, I think I could have a very successful Park show with either one of you. I could do a Jamie and Chris very successfully and a Liam and Chris very successfully.
That's it. It's so interesting though, because we're kind of circling around the same idea, which is, like efficiency or like easier group mind or all these kind of things that are like kind of a function of only having two people instead of the complexity of having a third person. I keep kind of mulling over what Jamie said at the beginning about like a clown trio works. And I'm trying to think about it. It's like, well, status is a really big part of that. So like, are there ways we're not thinking about the 3-person group or that we should, where, you know, it sounds like a big problem for people is if there are two people who feel on an even status and one person feels separate from that, that seems to be a very challenging dynamic, either because they haven't practiced together as much or there used to be two people on a team together and this person's newer to their pairing, so they just don't have as much familiarity. Those sound like really challenging situations to be in. But I'm wondering if you can kind of status your way out of it on stage. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you circled back to that, Sam, because the reason I think a lot of clown trios do work is that it's not 2-1, because you have the high status, you have middle status, and you have low status. And so the fun is in watching the inner play between the high status versus the medium status, who bosses the medium status around, and then the medium status bosses the low status around, and the low status, you know, somehow flips it and usurps status, and then everybody's chaotic. So the reason it works is because it's not two against one, it's one against one against one. And that is delightful to watch because, yeah, you're right. It's all about status. And so maybe I'm not a trio aficionado, so I don't know all the different versions of it, but that's why I think those work so well.
It's funny because I could see that working as a three-person scene very well. Again, show, I don't know, but the scene I see is, you know, the general manager comes into the office and tells the regional manager this and that, and that regional manager goes over to the, you know, to the poor person at the desk. That's a really funny back and forth, sending that up and down that ladder. That's fun. Again, as a show, I don't know. Okay, Sam, how about this? Off the top of your head, what's a benefit of having three people versus two people? I know we can see all the things that are wrong with it, but what might be beneficial?
You do end up with extra brain power, which I think is kind of cool. And you know, I recently saw 3-2-1, the trio. They're called 3M. They perform here. They're all women who've been performing for a very long time. They're very expert. And it was cool because you could just sort of see like someone stand on the sidelines and they knew what to come in with, right? Like they're watching the two-person scene. The two people in there are trying to figure out what it is. They were able to kind of come in and either, you know, feed what's going on or, you know, just have that director's eye, which is really hard when you're part of a duo doing it from the inside while you're performing, right?
But Sam, I think you're onto something there. It's kind of what we've been saying this whole time. It's like, so in that three-person show, it's really a series of two-person scenes with one person who has the eye on the, I mean, I'm not speaking for the show. I didn't see the show, but I could see how that would be beneficial, where we kind of go, this is a series of two-person scenes with a walk-on or a tag-out, you know, by the third person who's on the outside who has that show eye.
Yeah, and also you get the license that you get in a duo of, we're more than happy to watch three people play a scene with four or five people in it, right? So now you have three people doing scenes that aren't just a three-person scene. They're like a four-character scene or more, which can add some more chaos as you shift characters and stuff. I think getting stuck in the three-person scene is where you're really in trouble.
I think you're right. I think it's getting stuck in the three-person scene itself. Because now I'm thinking about it, I wouldn't mind coaching a three-person team and kind of fucking around with the idea of like, what superpowers do we have? What benefits do we have where we're just enhancing a series of two-person scenes? Do you know what I mean? With that walk-on that you might not get, with that quick tag out, with that environmental option. That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, my qualm with that kind of two-person with one person on the outside is that it's just off balance enough to be distracting, that somebody's standing on the side of the stage and it's just one person. When it's an ensemble standing, it's like, I understand this is how this is working. But when it's just one person standing off to the side, I find it distracting in a not positive way from a macro level.
Here's my pro tip. Find a place where you're not visible. It's great. Comedy Sports here had a curtain behind it. I just did a three-person show with Nick Gillette, who was on our last episode. He's fantastic. They had like a stage. It's more of like a music stage, but it was kind of cool. There was like a back, sort of like back open area. So I could like go leave the stage and stand right back there. So you are only seeing the two people on stage. You're 100% correct, though. It's really weird when someone's just standing on the sideline and it's just the one person. So yes, find reasons to exit, but do make yourself invisible.
I'm thinking of like some JTS Brown. I don't know if either of you are familiar with that form. Some JTS Brown elements where the third person always has to be some kind of inanimate object, but then they are also responsible for like an edit, like an organic edit. You know, you are the lamp, and then you also begin the next scene, and then one of the other two then becomes another inanimate object in that space. They become cool, the vending machine.
I love that.
That's kind of cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, So we don't have that awkwardness. I mean, it's still a little funky, but maybe funky in a cool way if, like, you know, every member becomes just an object for a moment. Also, okay, so what about this? Because we touched on it, but didn't go into it. It's something I've struggled with for a long time, which is when the team is running a play, the same play, we understand the goal, whether it be a form or a tone, even the park, though there's a lot going on, I always get the impression that Jamie and Liam are running the same play. I feel for this, for our listener, because I also always was more of like the actor as opposed to the comedian in improv scenes, what kind of conversation do you have to have with that? Like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like, how do you appease everybody? Is it okay to say, hey, I really prefer physical, and someone else says, I prefer emotional. Do we blend those? Or is it that, like, when I see that Sam is doing a physical move, even though I'm quote unquote an emotional player, for this particular scene, I set aside my want and jump into the physicality. Maybe later on in the show, when I slow it down, Sam then recognizes that and he slows it down with me to kind of satisfy everybody's, you know, needs. Or I don't know, that sounds a little clunky when I say it out loud, because I do think that it's unfortunate if you're on a team and you're off to the side going like, this is not what I actually want to be doing, but I don't know how to, because I've spent time doing that, you know, I don't know how to marry those ideas though.
Yeah, it's I think it's one of the most challenging things of artistic collaboration is finding people who want to do something similar to what you want to do. And there are a couple of ways I try to think about it. Like, one, if I really want to do it, I need to lead it. I need to put it together. I need to do it myself. If someone else is putting it together and I'm lucky enough to be a part of it, then I'll probably try to go along with what the majority wants to do, and I'll try to get one thing out of it, right? So, you know, I'll keep talking about the trio because we just had Nick on, but like, we were talking about what we kind of wanted to do, and we really wanted to do like organic long form. Like TJ and Dave was kind of an inspiration. That's very different from like slapstick that I also kind of want to do, but I know that like, I'm not going to try to sort of like force that in. Maybe I can find some, you know, organic connections sort of a thing, but I need to find a different thing. Maybe it's a class, maybe it's another group, maybe it's a duo where I can focus on the physical stuff a little bit more. So I try to get one thing out of each project. I try not to get like all the
But you know, you're also older, Sam, and have been doing this for a while. And I guess what I'm saying is I can see, because I've been that person, I can see our listener who's currently in classes. When you're younger and you're not as established, it's kind of hard to like find you the emotional improv team and then the physical team. Like, Jamie, you've done a good job of like, we've ran rehearsals now with a number of people you've wanted to just kind of test play with, if for lack of a better way of putting that. But this person might not have that opportunity. We remember that when we were younger, we didn't have plenty of opportunities. It was like, oh, two of the people want me to join, I'm in, you know? And that's kind of, and I guess maybe part of it, it's like, sorry, dog, you got to just go through the reps of feeling of not doing what it is you want to do all the time. Or I don't know.
Well, I think about, and maybe this is just me, but I think about what it is that I like to do. And I just have learned to acknowledge that I can't plant my flag anywhere because it's so fluid. It changes week to week. I'm influenced by the flavor of the month. It could be clown, it could be slapstick, comedia, it could be Godot. So I can't really plant my flag as this is how I like to play. I'm very fluid, which is why I like to play with so many different people and groups and styles. And I'm all over town doing different stuff because there's so many different things and shades to explore. It does make it, the problem with that is that it makes it very difficult to play any at one particular venue, because I have 30 different voices going on in my head, and it's almost hard to then step into this theater's style and then go over here and play with this group and do. I find myself very lost in, for me, a fun way, but I don't know if it annoys other people to have me be lost in their show. But to me, I'm like very, it's a very exploratory sensibility. And I don't know that other people have the patience for it. I get the sense with some groups that it annoys them that I'm not sharp and on my game with their exact style, but I'm doing my best, but also have so many other things going on. So I don't have a good answer to that. And maybe that's just a me problem, but I'm all over the place.
No, but I don't know. There's something to being all over the place that I think is beneficial. Because forever, I was just saying like, emotion. I'm so tired of hearing myself say that like, it's almost embarrassing now that I spent some time in, I'm in my clown era, as they say, like it's, I almost look back at a lot of my years where I was like fighting for this style that I love so much. Granted, it was nice to spend time there, but like I fought for that, like this is the way. And to be playing a little more silly these days, I'm like, dang, I could have just been silly sometimes too. I mean, not that I wasn't, whatever, but I, there was this internal struggle for sure before any given show of like, this tug of war. But, you know, maybe letting go of some of that is okay too, and finding something greater together, though that sounds very like woo-woo, but I don't know.
There's that tension, right? And I think, you know, there are groups that are all kind of play the same, and I think those can be fun, but they're also maybe one-dimensional in some way because they're all kind of playing the same way, but you can get a little bit more in rhythm. You all know the plays that you're calling. The other style is everyone's kind of playing to their own strengths. So you have one person who's big character, you have another person who's game. Like those can also be like some of the most incredible shows because you have such a different palette of stuff, but I think they're harder and take longer to get right because you have to understand how all those things blend together. And so I wouldn't necessarily like in a trio tell someone to shy away from doing something that you like to do, but like, yeah, can you be the emotion guy on the team? Someone else could be the physical comedy guy. Someone else can be the character person. You should all be doing all that stuff anyways, right? But everyone can kind of still bring their strengths to the party.
Sam, what about the idea of like knowing each other so well, what our strengths are, what we love to do, and therefore that leads to an opportunity for setups where I could do some alley-oops to you, right? You want to get physical? Great. You know, I'm pulling the chair out from underneath you. You bounce past me in emotional monologue setup or something could be kind of fun too, to lean into those strengths where it's like, oh, it's this moment in the scene. Okay, this person's going to take it away because this is where they want to flex, where they shine. There's something kind of cool about that.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it Dazarisky that's Bob Dassey, Rich Tallarico, and Craig Kukowski, right? That's a trio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you know, that was the coolest thing for being at iOS when I got there. It was like, you could just go in and you could see people who had been playing forever, but also playing with each other forever. And that kind of improv is so enjoyable from a comedy standpoint, because now you're teasing each other, you're setting each other up, you know,
yeah,
know each other so well. Again, like when you're just starting out and like two people say, hey, do you want to be part of our trio? You're like, yeah, great. Part of the challenge is you also have to be friends with those people, right? So maybe you don't like the same movies as them. You have to try to get on the same page in some ways.
I didn't even think about Dazarisky. We should have Craig back. I mean, talk about trios. Like, that guy knows trios. Is there an ideal number of players for an improv team? So we know, Jamie, you love two. Two works. Three, yeah, you know, it could work, but no one's screaming for it. Then we get to four. It's a little, that's interesting too. And then, you know, five and so on. And then it goes six, and then it goes seven. Is there a number that kind of speaks to you one over the other? For me right now, I'm thinking five. Jamie's kind of in agreement there. Three, I see a lot of
two or five. I think one, I mean, I would love to hear somebody defend the one person improv show.
I did it. I can't defend it.
well, I want somebody on this show who is so passionate about it and believes so hard in it that they can convince me. I'm open-minded, but I want to hear a full-throated defense of the one person improv show.
Sorry to interrupt. We mentioned Monica Smith in the chat today. I think she's done a number of one person improv shows. She might be interesting.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt.
Jamie, so two or five?
I would say two or five. Two is my ideal. Two is number one, and five is number two.
Can you say that again, please?
Two is number one, and five is number two. Three is number zero. Four is no good. Six, seven, too many. Eight, too many. Anything above that, no.
You know what's funky about the four, Sam, before I let you get yours, is, you know, I coach a bunch, and sometimes only four players will make it. The funky move is we see the one two-person scene, we see the second two-person scene, and the third one is always jumbled because I'm asking one of those two to stay in. It's and because we want to switch up the pairings, but then they've just got done playing grandpa or whatever, and now they're playing a sniper. But there's always this it's never smooth, it never like flows. It's always this clunky, like, wait, you stay, hold on, okay, you, I know you were just in it, but you need to stay. It gets a little clunky,
it gets a little wonky. I can't think of a number without thinking of a form. You know, because a 5-person herald is tough, right? I'd rather have 6 or 7 people for a herald, maybe 8, but I don't want like 9 people on a herald. That might be too many. I think it's also really important to be reasonable about people's commitments and schedules. So like, we produced a superhero movie show. We cast 10 people, which is way too many, right? I don't want 10 people all on stage at the same time, but one had to drop out, one had to miss one show. You know, we had a 3-person rehearsal at some point. So it's like, even over a month and a half, basically, these things can happen. So you might have a trio and, you know, one person has an emergency, but you still want to do the show because you want to be, you know, fulfilling that commitment. So I think there's like, what is ideal from the artistic sense on stage? And I think to some extent, like, structure determines that. Like, 4 is good for a sitcom style form, maybe. I think there's also some like practical considerations, right? Which kind of go along to like, if you're just starting out and it's a practice group, any number is great. Honestly, any number team would be fine for your first practice group or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have two thoughts. I'm thinking now, you know, the Park had their show recently, and we precede Yes Ampersand, the Chicago heavy hitters. Normally there's 6 of them. There was only 3 this last week. And I will say, they didn't have quite the shine.
Interesting.
They had, when they had their 6. And I think the 3 was a little bit trickier to navigate, especially maybe when you're used to 6. Maybe that's part of it, is they just haven't built up the trio muscle. But it didn't have the luster that it had when everybody was there, I'll say that. Secondly, if you'll humor me, one of the clown class Chris and I are in, the teacher, David Bridell, provided us all individual feedback. And his feedback to me via email was to play with the converse of whatever emotional or opinion states that I have. And so if you'll humor me, I'd like to defend the trio right now.
Sure.
You guys, the trio is wonderful. First of all, the rule of threes holds up, because when you have 2 people and you have that 3rd person, like Sam said, it's more brain power on stage. That person is on the outside. They have they're developing what that next move could be to enter the scene with that brilliant walk on. They could be a lamp. Chris, you're so right. They could be a lamp in the back of this, in the JTS Brown. They could then.
I feel like he's mocking us.
He's mocking us.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right. Maybe it's not working. I'll have to write David back and see it.
Sam, just really quickly, just a special shout out here, because when you mentioned numbers and forms, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the 2-person team that I coach occasionally via Zoom. They're in San Diego. Silly Gooses is their name, and they do a 2-person deconstruction.
Oh, wow.
And you would never think that would be something that would be done or should be done, but they do it very well. And, you know, I forget sometimes, like our listeners, you know, into this acting or the Stella Adler or the emotional play, some people love the mathematics of improvisation. Some people love a form. And part of the joy for them is, you know, playing with the scaffolding of a deconstruction. And that's never been something I like to do a lot, but they have a lot of fun with it. And I'm saying, you know what, respect, because there are different ways to enjoy what it is we do.
Yeah, there's it's funny, you know, I did TV writing for a while, and there were like 2 backgrounds a lot of TV writers came from. One of them was like acting, and then the other one was more like engineering. And I was always kind of like fascinated by that. But like, there is a way to think about some of this stuff that gets a little bit more into mathy than emotional. Now, I mean, like, we're talking about trios. Like, I would hate to see a team of 3 mathy players, right? Like, I want like my 1 mathy person and maybe 2 emotional, right? You get that sort of like robot pirate ninja sort of vibe going on. I think like it's important to keep in mind that we all do have different styles and different backgrounds and different trainings, and casting a show to have a good mix of that is important.
You know, sometimes those backgrounds can get in the way. One thing that I like about a two person is, as much as you want to hold on, you kind of have to really let go, which is really fun, and let the piece go where it needs to go. Where if it's a 3 or 4 person, I'm on the sidelines, I can begin to kind of do some show moves because I'm on the outside, I'm taking a break. But when that train gets going on that two person scene, it's just like go, 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 go. And it's really cool. Like, it's hard to, I mean, you can, but it feels like it wouldn't be beneficial to pump the brakes on a two person to inject what it is you want to do in that moment, rather to kind of just go for the ride, you know?
Yeah, although, and you know, maybe we'll do an episode on duos, so I don't want to tangent too much, but you know, again, I think a trio, entrances and exits are important. I think a duo, entrances and exits are important, right? Leave that person on stage by themselves for a second. Take that time. Honestly, try to disappear if you can. Even go sit in the audience or whatever. But yeah, I talked a lot about entrances and exits recently in my coaching. And so it's just something that's top of mind for me.
Sam, we never see that in the two person. I don't know. Well, I don't really see that a lot of a two person scene or show, which is one of the players is a vending machine, is an inanimate object. That's sick, dude, to have the other person doing a monologue or just talking to this object is really cool. I coached a musical group the other day, and there was 5 of them, and so, or 7, I forget, but there were 7. So there's 3 groups of 2. They're doing a mono scene musical, which is ambitious.
Wow.
And I applaud them, and they're doing a really good job with, like, cool. Just a quick side tangent. As a coach, when you hire me and you get me a theater space and you're also hiring a piano player and accompanist, I'm on board. These people are taking it serious. It's really nice. Anyway, during this one particular moment, there was 3 groups of 2 doing these little kind of give and take living room style. And then there was 1 person, and I was like, you're doing the scene with the tree, you know? And then his song to the tree is so cool, you know, to like, because everyone else is doing their little duo stuff. I love a moment like that. I love a moment where, like, we get to see the one person interacting with that inanimate object, but having an emotional connection with it. I'm done talking.
No, I love that. I mean, it's another odd number, right? And so it's like, yeah, why doesn't a trio, you can always play to a tree if you're the third person. Why not?
Yeah.
I want to think back to our listener, our write-in listener, and see if we can give that person some practical advice, notwithstanding my admonitions against it. Let's say this person still decides to do trio work, or other people. How can we help them make that as successful as possible? Let's say they're building from the ground up. What advice would either of you give to a newly founded trio that wanted to have the best trio shows in town?
Maybe we can go around and kind of share a thought or two and keep going, because I have a couple of like loose ones. First one, which is, you know, what we're talking about a lot, which everybody talks about, is the 2 versus 1. I think let's accept that that's inevitable. And then when we find ourselves in it, lean into it then. That's okay. It doesn't need to be the whole show, but in that one moment, that one scene, let's just lean into it. Because I know myself, I've been in it. And I'm like, oh, I'm in that 2 versus 1. Okay, how do I get out of this 2 versus 1? And that's just me thinking and not being in the moment, not enjoying, you know, building this together.
I just started a trio, so this is very top of mind for me.
That's right.
What I think we found was don't get stuck in a mono scene by default, right? Like, it can be very easy to just be the 3 people in that one room, and that's the show, because you only have 12, 15 minutes or whatever anyways. It's very easy to get stuck there. As a team, agree on edits, ways to shift energy, find ways to leave the stage, just create some dynamism so it's not just sort of this awkward 3-person scene the whole time. Unless that's a choice.
Yeah, I agree with what each of you have said. I think be mindful of the 2-1 dynamic. If it happens, it's inevitable. Lean into it, but then break it for the next scene. you know, just move away from that. I will say as well, don't be tied to an equal 33% share of the show. Maybe you have a 40, a 40, and a 20. And that 20% is just as valuable, but you don't need to have equal stage time or equal thirds of the show. I think that's when it becomes troublesome. Just play the background.
I love that, Jamie. I really love that. I mean, even if it was a different ratio where it's one person's journey, they're on their way across the country.
5-5.
And then we see is just a series of these characters that this one person is running into along the way. We did something like that in a rehearsal once, Jamie. I love that idea. Jeez, I want to just spend a little bit more time there. I think there is the assumption that it's, I get mine, you get yours, but not more or less. And there is something really nice about like setting that as a rule when you walk in. To me, it already frees up a lot of tension. That feels really good. Jeez. I've said it 75 times, but it's worth repeating. I don't know, play something that isn't a person in one of those scenes. I'm losing steam here.
I'll quote you, Chris. You introduced it to me. Like, have your own deal. I think that's really important in any kind of group scene work, but I think especially in a trio, like you have to set yourself up and endow yourself with stuff so that you can really contribute.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What does it look like when you take care of yourself in a three-person scene? I love that idea. And it sounds like we're giving, and Jamie, I'll let you go, but it sounds like we're giving kind of like three-person scene tips that will ultimately make for a better three-person show. These little, because you're right, like we can be in the two versus one, cool. But if next time you're in it, break it. Or in this particular scene, this one's kind of the star or has more of a percentage. That's interesting. Please, Jamie.
I think also, and we were touching on this last night in the workshop, I think simplicity is key, because the problem with the third person element is that it adds so much complexity for the audience to try to wrap their brain around. So if everybody comes in with something complex and distinct, then the audience just has to spend a bunch of time figuring it out. So I would say keep whatever your want or your deal is very, very simple and stupid and unnuanced.
I mean, how satisfying is a stupid peas in a pod with three people? I think that'd be really satisfying. Three dopes on a pier. I want to watch that.
Three stooges.
Three stooges. Huh. Sam?
A good sketch idea.
Did you just... Okay, so paint a picture for me. Okay. You're right, though. You're right. Or three of the most serious people you've ever seen in deliberating something. You know, just like... just super serious and just like trying to get to the bottom of it. Also sounds very simple, Jamie. Yeah, that's a really good point. Jeez, Jamie, you're bringing it home. Because like I say, I don't need you to tell me a sentence that's never been said in the history of the world. A lot of improvisers do that. They don't want to just say, I love you. They think that's too simple. It's not clever. It's not witty. But now if you have three people being all convoluted and stuff, that takes a lot. Yeah, just simple. Keep it simple. How do you feel right now? How about this? I know we're going around, but what about the idea? I say it more than I do it, if I'm being honest, and I say it a lot. The idea of knowing how you feel about each person in the scene. So you might, you know, right, Sam, you might love this one, hate this one, or there could be a little more nuance, but sometimes we forget to do that.
Yeah, there's that exercise. I think I played it at Impro in LA, and I've seen it elsewhere, but it's like stinky or sexy, right? And like there's one person you think is stinky, and there's one person you kind of think is sexy, right? Or just one person that you want to get away from, one person that you want to be closer to or be with. That is such a powerful tool in a three-person scene, because Jeez. Then I can very quickly set that up. I don't have to think about like, well, they make me angry when they buy pizza.
Exactly.
He makes me, you know, like that gets really tough. But just,
I mean, Jamie, three characters trapped in a bank vault, right? And they're playing with the idea that stinky sexy could alleviate some of the two versus one, depending on who you think is sexy or stinky, right? That's interesting. That's, if I think you're, I'm going to mess this all up, but there is something really cool about that, Sam. So kind of And I think it's beneficial. Again, I say this a lot. I say more than I do, but something beneficial about coming up with that sooner rather than later. So that, like you said, Sam, I'm not making my judgments based on the things you're saying and doing every moment. Like, now I like you. Now I don't like when you do this. Just kind of generally, I think you're stinky. Generally, I think you're sexy. I think you're both sexy, by the way.
Thank you. That's another way to play that game.
What if everyone thinks everyone's stinky? That's fun. Or everyone thinks everyone's sexy? That's fun. And I think it's worth mentioning for our listeners specifically, with some of the things. First of all, I think you should share this particular episode with your teammates. And then I think sometimes we forget to do this because we don't want to hurt feelings, but having a conversation, let's just lay it all out so that we don't have these resentments building up or these frustrations in the rehearsals or the shows. Just like have that conversation, go to coffee, get over caffeinated, and just talk about all the things you love so much about all of this. And you're going to find that common ground, or even if you don't, you get to respect other people's ideas. And I wonder who their coach is too, if there is a coach involved here.
Yeah. I was going to mention that's an important thing, is like having someone as that facilitator for those conversations as well. A coach can also provide a common target. So if you feel like you're all on separate pages, like a coach can kind of come in and say like, hey, let's try to do this thing all together.
For this listener in particular, I feel like a good prescription would be 1 week with Jamie, 1 week with Chris Alvarado, 1 week with Jamie, 1 week with Chris Alvarado. You just hire us, you know, and just go like that. Right, Jamie? Doesn't that sound like a good plan?
That's right. I'm free Wednesday evenings, alternating Wednesday evenings starting in November. I don't know, this isn't how to do a successful three-person scenes, but this is just something I'm thinking about. If there are three people in a scene, I would like to see, rather than like have a triangle of connections between the improvisers where A and B have their connection, B and C have their connection, and then C and A have their connection, I would like to see if there could be like a domino effect. Like one, A does something to B, which triggers something, you know, B does something to C, and then C does something back to A. Like that's almost that Three Stooges mentality where like, any button gets pressed and it causes a chain reaction in the group, which I think is something that you could do with a trio that you can't really do with a duo, or maybe even
bigger love triangles, right? I mean, that's a classic thing. We got a puppy, and I've just been watching my girlfriend. My girlfriend wants to play with the puppy. The puppy wants to play with our current dog. Our current dog just wants to play with Allie. And it's just like, they're all just chasing each other and none of them are getting what they want. And it's an infinite game.
We say here in our house that, I love Jessica. Jessica loves Sunny, and Sunny loves me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting idea, Jamie. That feels like I'll have to work that out in a rehearsal sometime. Pressing this button, or however you said it, that causes just this chain reaction. That sounds like a little complicated, but a little exciting to me.
Well, I was even thinking about it with the status thing we were talking about earlier, right? So the boss comes in, tells the middle manager tells the servant. Servant goes, complains to the, you know, in the break room, doesn't realize he's talking to the manager about how, you know, talks to the boss about how the manager doesn't do any work. The boss goes and yells at the manager goes, yells at the guy, right? He goes, complains, right? All the way back through. So like, I mean, you can have some fun with that.
Is that like a Neil Simon play? Is that what that looks like? That sounds like a very fun formula. I would like to see that. I feel like it's probably been done.
Trio formula.
Yeah.
I guess my point is with that is I don't want to see, because if A and B are then having their moment, then, you know, C is the odd person out, and I want to see everybody involved in everything, which is why I kind of like the chain reaction of scene structure where one thing happens to one person, but it has consequences for everybody rather than it's just kind of localized to A and B. I don't know. That's just something I would like to see. If I want to see a trio show, I want to see the trio at its maximum potential, which I think that could help push toward. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll wrap this up. I'm just doing my own little math here. Gosh, I love that stinky sexy thing. I've been saying it's generally positive or generally negative, but that is so clunky to say. Stinky and sexy is fun. What's up?
Is that your new workshop?
Yeah, stinky. I just don't like the word stinky.
I gotta find something. I forget. I think there were some other terms for it as well. Sexy might not be the connotation we want.
I mean, I even just say yes or no. Honestly, I'm like, I'm more yes on this person. I'm more no on this person, but I like this idea.
I like that.
But with the three people, if I don't want to do all the math here, I like that idea. I think that'd be a fun full. I would do a full 2-hour rehearsal with a trio of with just that idea. That's stinky sexy. I think we'd come up with some fun combinations. And I think sometimes we would avoid the 2 versus 1 and sometimes we'd be in it, which is totally fine. I don't know. I think we figured it out. I think all of our tips, all of our thoughts sprinkled in would make for a nice 3-person show. Things to consider, things to stay away from, things to lean into. Sounds nice. You know, we know for sure that a 3-person podcast, that works. You know. Bye, everybody. When neither of you spoke after that.
I knew the 3-person
podcast was. Right? It's just like, it just crumbles. It just crumbles.
You're such assholes. We know that 3-person podcast works, right? I want you guys, oh yeah, for sure. Oh, we're being cutesy. Instead, nothing. I want to say something. We're done with this, right?
We're done.